Welcome to Movie Crush, a production of iHeartRadio. Hey, everybody, and welcome to Movie Crush Friday interview edition with return guest Jordan Morris.
Mellow greetings, Chuck. Mellow greetings. What's your boggle, sir?
I kind of want to punch you now. And you're the least punchable person I know.
Yeah, apparently reciting verbatim dialogue from Demolition Man makes you instantly hateable.
So we are here to do a couple of things. We are going to talk about Demolition Man, but before we get going, and know that you have a project coming up soon, which is in, this sounds like you're some kind of a self-centered jerk to say that you got in touch with me for that reason, but you know, you said, hey, let's get on Movie Crush and talk about it and talk about something else.
Yeah. Listen, you know, I'm making the rounds. I'm doing pods. I have a graphic novel coming out that I co-wrote, and, you know, since Comic-Cons and the like might not be a thing for another couple of months, I'm, you know, just trying to get the word out. And also there's a sub reason for wanting to podcast is that, you know, pandemic and all, it's a nice way to see friendly friends that you like. So, you know,
yeah, totally.
I also have mental health reasons for wanting to get in touch. Oh.
Well, I hope I can help and not make things worse for you.
No, I mean, just talking about Demo Man with one of my favorite dudes. instant cheer up.
I want to hear about it. What's going on?
Of course, yes. July 13th, a graphic novel called Bubble is coming out. Written by me and the great comedy writer Sarah Morgan. Drawn by the great comic book artist Tony Cliff, who does the Delilah Dirk series, and colored by Natalie Reese, who does the Dungeon Critters series. Just an awesome team of funny, cool people worked on this. It is a sci-fi comedy. The elevator pitch would probably be Search Party meets Guardians of the Galaxy, if you can imagine such a thing. It's based on the Max Fun podcast came out a couple years ago,
which was great.
Oh, thanks. Totally awesome, and a lot of great fans of that show, and just really excited to comic bookify it. I think it kind of felt like a natural place for the story to go. It's a very comic booky story with aliens and robots and gore. It really really took nicely to the comics page, I think.
Yeah, I got a couple of questions here.
Oh, sure.
The first one is, what, as far as the story of Bubble goes, is this a sequel or is it a prequel or is it just another chapter? What is it?
Yeah. So, you know, the initial talks I had with the publisher, they said they wanted something that was, you know, kind of a retelling of the events of the podcast, but with some changes. There was obviously like stuff, you know, that we wanted to make a little more comic booky. They wanted a different ending. So I think when we were kind of setting it out to, you know, to adapt it, and we were deciding what to cut and what to add, we wanted to like keep favorite stuff from the podcast, but also give people enough new stuff to where, you know, you don't just feel like it's the exact same story. So hopefully it's it's the cool bits of the podcast, but with enough new stuff and a new ending and some new scenes and locales that, you know, you feel like, you know, it wasn't just we handed the podcast to an artist and said, you know, get drawn, asshole. Yeah.
Different ending. Interesting. I'm curious about this new ending.
Yeah. Yeah. We definitely you know, there's so much plot in the podcast, you know, because there's eight episodes and there's a lot of there's just a lot of plot. And I think it, you know, we had a you know, a limited amount of space because obviously, you know, this thing can't be 400 pages.
Right.
This cannot be the Snyder cut of graphic novels.
Right.
so we kind of like decided to kind of like minimize the plot a little bit and really drill down on the characters and really kind of get into them a little bit more, figure out what makes them tick, kind of give them, you know, kind of explore their inner lives and motivations and stuff like that. So yeah, and hopefully, you know, a funny, cool way. But yeah, so that was kind of like, those were kind of the broad goals we went into it with.
That sounds cool. It sounds like, I mean, if you're a fan of the Bubble podcast, which I am, I thought it was really great. It sounds like this could be a really good companion piece almost to make it a bigger hole, if you know what I'm talking about. A bigger hole?
Yeah. You know, if there's one thing I love, it's big holes. Big, gaping, cavernous holes.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so, no, I mean, that's a really good way to put it. I think, you know, I think something that we wanted was that, like, okay, if you've heard the podcast, we want this to be something that feels new and additional.
Yeah.
But also, you know, a lot of people don't listen to narrative podcasts, you know,
right.
Like a lot of people, you know, just aren't into the genre, or they, you know, they like chat, they like other kinds of things. So, you know, we wanted this to be something of like, if you love comics, if you're a comics person, you know, and you like monsters and sex jokes and, you know, satire and robots and explosions, like this is something you can like pick up and enjoy. So yeah, and ideally it doesn't feel like it's all inside jokes. Although
right.
We have some little Easter eggs for podcast fans.
Oh, very nice.
But hopefully it doesn't feel like, you know, you're just, you know, you're paging through somebody's inside jokes, you know? So
right. Yeah. Is the hope that this becomes a first of many?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's what we would like. I mean, obviously, you know, we'll see how this one sells and see how pre-orders
right,
go.
Of
but
course.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think the team really, really had a good time with this. And yeah, I think given the opportunity, we would love to just keep telling Bubble stories until we die. So,
right.
I think, you know, schedules permitting, everybody would love to do more. And, yeah, so hopefully people are into this one.
Now, what is it like writing for a graphic novel? I mean, you've written everything from, to straight up sort of satire to, you were a writer on At Midnight for a while, so very kind of quick, punchy jokes.
Yeah.
What about writing for a graphic novel? Was that an entirely new thing, or was it just sort of a different skin on what you do?
Boy, yeah, it was really interesting. I've been a, like, comics reader since, you know, I was a little kid, since I was, you know, being bad in the grocery store and my mom had to get me something to quiet me down. Like, I've definitely just, like, read comics, you know, since I could read things. So yeah, and they always like seemed like magic to me, though. You know, they always seemed like something someone else did. You know, like, well, I can never do this. This is a goddamn magic trick how these things get made. So yeah, I definitely like, you know, held them in very high regard. And you know, Tony Cliff, the artist, is, you know, just a goddamn pro, and you know, has done such beautiful work over his career, and just kind of knows the format and has really great storytelling ideas. So he was a great guide. You know, and I know Sarah, my co-writer, you know, it similarly is a TV writer who loved comics, who always kind of wanted to do it. So, you know, we kind of came at it with this TV writing mentality, and very specifically late night comedy. She does a lot of late night comedy in the UK. And so we are used to jobs where you get paid like by the page. It's like you just need to fill a fucking page with jokes, you know, and that's kind of how your success is measured. So we definitely in our early drafts overwrote. We like, you know, would have 10 jokes per premise, 10 jokes per page, and like
right
when that happens, you can't see the pictures because the fucking page is filled up with words. So there was a process of being like selective about what we put and kind of like being a little choosier with jokes and kind of shortening ideas because, you know, the art in this thing is beautiful. You know, Tony and Natalie are both like two of the fucking best in the world, you know? And so, you know, we wanted to strike a balance between like letting people kind of enjoy, you know, the scenery and you know, it is a cool world. It's kind of a world where, you know, it's a kind of a near future where people live in these bubble cities, but outside there's this crazy alien landscape filled with monsters. So, you know, both kind of those primary settings, you know, Tony and Natalie made them look so cool. So, so there was kind of a process of like, can we be choosier about this? Can we be a little more like, you know, snipery with the dialogue and the ideas? So as to, you know, let people enjoy the visuals and the words too.
That's awesome. I imagine that's an interesting exercise for a writer to put on a different hat in a different medium. And especially if you're having to whittle it down, I would imagine you end up with like the gold, you know, at the bottom of the pot.
Yeah, that's the hope, is that the gold pot is what you're getting. You know, I think you know, definitely Sarah and I's kind of jokey wordiness is still there. You know, I think you know that sort of thing is still kind of present in it, but. You know, in a way that's still like respectful to the art. So yeah, it was really interesting. And I think were I to do more comics down the line, I definitely would like kind of have that mentality going in of like, okay, how can I make this dialogue, you know, say what I want it to say, but also kind of give the artist room to kind of like show off and stretch their legs too.
That's cool, man. I really, I can't wait to see this world come to life, because one of the great things about Bubble is it is such a cool world, and it's fun. You know, if people haven't listened to fiction narrative podcasts, like, give it a whirl, because it's a rich, it kind of reminds me when I was a kid and you would listen to stories, records and stuff, and it's just such a rich area for the mind to blossom and picture your own stuff. And you can, you know, you can do so much in a podcast to try and describe stuff without bogging it down. But a lot of that, you just have to leave up to the listener to imagine. And I know the world of Bubble in my brain, and now I'm going to be interested to see what it looks like and like how wrong I was in my own brain, basically.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I that's something I think we're all kind of curious about, is the like reaction from people who have listened. Like,
yeah.
Does this look like what was in your brain? I think hopefully, you know, people are cool with it being different or the same. But yeah, I'm that's one of the things I'm super fascinated to see, is like,
yeah,
people who listened, how close is this to what was in your brain? Honestly, it's pretty close to what was in my brain. I was really surprised how how Tony drew stuff real similar to what I was thinking.
That had to be cool, huh?
Yeah, that was actually a little bit part of our process, was every time there was, you know, a monster or something, you know, he's like, can you send me some comps? So I would just do, you know, Google image searches for certain Dark Souls monsters that I liked,
right,
and send them over. And, you know, like buildings, like, what does this building kind of look like? So I would send him like apartments and stuff. So yeah, I mean, it's obviously that contributed to why stuff looks similar to my brain, but also just some of the choices he made, I'm like, that is right on. And this is kind of interesting as far as the character designs go. He didn't draw the actors from the podcast,
I was wondering,
verbatim, but with every character he started with one of their physical attributes. So like you know, we have a character played by Eliza Skinner, the great comedian and writer Eliza Skinner. So she, you know, she has a really cool beauty mark. And so we kind of, he started with that character's beauty mark and kind of expounded off it. And that's awesome. Yeah, so you'll see that with all the characters, that there's something, you know, if you know the actor, then you can see those little physical attributes right. that were the starting point. But they all do look, you know, kind of like their own characters. So
that's awesome, man. Give them a little nod.
Yeah, for sure. Know? But there are some, drawn Max Fun cameos in there too that you'll see. If you're a fan of the Max Fun podcast averse, you'll see some familiar faces.
Oh, that's great, dude. I can't wait. When does it come out and when can people pre-order and where?
Yeah, so July 13th it comes out, but you can pre-order it now basically wherever you get your books. So Amazon, Barnes & Noble, but also like, hey man, call that local indie bookstore that might be having a tough time right now, or your local comic shop, and they'll pre-order it up for you. And I think I can say this is that we have some cool stuff planned for people who pre-order. So like, if you're curious, please get out there and pre-order it. It really helped the book. It helps those little bookstores. And hopefully you're going to get some cool stuff in return that I'll announce on social media when the time comes. So, yeah.
Well, I'm looking now at the us.macmillan.com website.
Yes.
And it looks great. It actually has some panels here based on the Smash Hit podcast. And I'm going to pre-order it right now. Hardcover.
Hardcover. Chuck, that's too much. Get the hardcover. It's beautiful.
No, I always get hardcovers. I'm still a book guy. I'm one of those weirdos who loves hardcover books and putting them on my bookshelf. And this looks fantastic. Cannot wait, my friend.
Oh, thanks, dude. Thank you so much. It's really, really nice of you. And yeah, definitely. I it's funny. I this is my first publishing thing and I really got a lesson in the importance of pre-ordering books. So
we did too recently. Josh and I had our book out and they're like, you hear that word a lot when you're in the meetings. It's all about that pre-order.
Yeah. It's not something I'm embarrassed to say. It's not something that I did personally before this, but now I'm like, I am a book pre-orderer. I realize that
Yeah, that's great. Pre-orders are, and we told this, we were preaching to the Stuff You Should Know listeners for a while about the importance of pre-orders. And I think it's just, I don't know what it is. It builds, I think they want a big first day number, which the pre-orders sort of aggregate to. And it's just a very significant thing. I remember Hodgman talking to me about pre-orders being a big deal. And that's why people get sick of hearing people say pre-order.
Of course,
it's just what you got to do.
Yep, I know.
Pre-order bubble, everybody. It looks fantastic.
Yeah, thanks.
Love it. So, Demolition Man is the movie you picked, which I thought was kind of funny. You sent me a few options, and I picked Demolition Man for two reasons. One, because you picked Point Break the first time, and this is another sort of 90s kind of corny action movie that's a lot of fun.
Yep.
And I picked it because I had never seen it, and then I remembered I saw the first like 15 minutes of it. And this came out when I was in college, so let me explain. I'm older than you, so this came out probably when you were primetime young kid.
Yes, yeah. Maybe in hindsight, maybe a little young to have been seeing this in a theater, but yes, definitely like the age to where, you know, Stallone and Snipes high-kicking things was my primary interest.
Right, so I was like 22 in college, and we went to the theater to see this, me and a couple of friends. And after about, I would have stayed. I'm not one to leave a movie ever. But my friend, Brett, he has very little patience with something he doesn't like. And after about 15 minutes, he went, I can't take it. He went, I'm fucking out of here. And he That's got so up funny. And we followed him. And we went in and saw True Romance for like the third time, which had been going for about 10 minutes as well. So that was my Demolition Man. And so I think until this morning, like I literally just finished watching it, I was confusing it. I thought it was a comic book spinoff. And I think I was thinking of Judge Dredd.
Oh, right. Yeah. Similar. Yes. Also a Stallone. And then also maybe some similar like costume design, especially on the like police uniforms.
Apart.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had it totally wrong. And this was definitely, you know, as of 2.5 hours ago, I had never really seen Demolition Man. And now I have. And I got to say, it was corny and dumb and great and funny. And I think a movie that like, and I did read, you know, thankfully Den of Geek and some other Rotten Tomatoes had a pretty good essay of like, you know, 30 years on or 20 years on. Has it been 30 years?
Yeah, let's see. I guess 93. Just about.
Yeah, 30 years on almost. And these nice retrospectives when you can go back and look at a movie like this.
Yeah.
And I think the consensus for this guy from Rotten Tomatoes was this was a great comedy satire in the making that Stallone was acting in his own movie, according to this guy.
Sure.
And
yeah.
It felt like he phoned in the comic moments, whereas a Kurt Russell or a Bruce Willis would have really taken this over the top as some sort of PC culture meta commentary on life and where we were headed. Whereas Stallone was a little too self-serious about it. And I sort of agree, but I also thought Stallone was kind of fun.
Yeah, I think he gets the comedy of it. I mean, obviously, like, you know, Kurt Russell is so good at this tone, you know?
It's kind of unfair to suggest.
So maybe hard not to say Kurt Russell would have been better, but I think Stallone does a pretty good job. He kind of like, you know, it's such a wild mishmash of tones, you know, like mm-hmm. I think part of it is like the movie is, you know, the movie is kind of schizophrenic. I think he does a good job with this. You know, obviously dream casting, you might find a better actor for it. But yeah, I think Stallone works. And definitely, like, there is an element of this movie that is kind of like parodying the Stallone oeuvre. So I think him being there, like, adds to some of that satire, you know?
I have to say to the listeners, I'm struggling right now because your cat just jumped up.
Yeah.
And all I want to do now is pet your cat.
Yeah, it's Bug. She definitely kind of knows when the Zoom is on.
Oh, man, it's the worst. I can't get in there and pet that cat right now.
Yeah,
and
no, she's got a fuzzy little belly.
I'm a magnet to all animals, so, like, it's I have a palpable reaction going on.
Yeah. I wonder if she's going to just sit here gargoyle-like for the remainder of the podcast.
She's so pretty. What a pretty cat.
Yeah, no, she's stunning. I moved recently, and she did a great job with the move. I'm really, really proud of her and how she's handling change.
Yeah, did she spend the first, like, 3 days sniffing every square inch?
Yeah, definitely. Almost kind of
cats
like...
Cats are so funny.
They're such weird little animals. But, I think she's going to try and jump onto the TV stand now. Will she make it?
Where's the new place, by the way? Where'd you move?
Pasadena. So, yeah, it's kind of like...
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it's been lovely.
I love Pasadena.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's definitely, like, kind of a kooky, you know, charmingly square suburb outside of LA. So, I'm having a good time.
I had friends that lived there. I quite enjoyed Pasadena, and we lived at the inn. Emily and I lived in Eagle Rock. So,
oh, cool.
Pasadena was like a quick, great, great restaurants, which, you know, of course you'll get to someday.
Yes. But, yeah. I've had some good takeout. So yeah.
So I thought it was kind of funny when this movie first opened and it was released in 93. And the initial wasteland of Los Angeles was 96.
Yeah. So the movie starts.
But 3 years later.
Yeah. It's so funny that they chose something so close to the movie's release date to be like, the world is fucked in 3 years.
The Hollywood sign was on fire.
It starts with the Hollywood sign burning. A not at all subtle piece of satire. Not a subtle movie. It's interesting. Yeah. There's a couple movies of this time that, like, imagine LA is this war zone. I think Predator 2 is another good example of, like, you know, the gangs of LA have gotten out of control and, you know, criminals run the streets. It's such a funny little subgenre.
Yeah. I mean, I think John Carpenter kind of it probably predates Escape from New York even, but that's always a fun premise where one of the biggest cities is now a war zone.
Right.
And what's going to happen to our hero when they're thrust into this world?
Right.
Or in this case, frozen out of this world into, and what's the spin on this movie is interesting is the hell is 96. And then they figured it all out 30 years later, and it's this weird sort of utopian society all of a sudden.
Right. Yeah.
That's the opposite. It usually gets worse.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I haven't even thought of that. Yeah. This movie is like a flash forward inside of a flash forward, you know?
Right.
Yeah. That's kind of so interesting. It's like, right. Imagining the dystopia and then imagining the utopia. Yeah.
Did you know about the story of the writer, the original story guy? Did you look into that at all?
Oh yeah. Isn't he, you know, wasn't it this kind of just his first movie and he shopped it around and it got rewritten at a couple of phases?
Well, quite a bit. I think he was like some guy from some Eastern Bloc country or something and wanted nothing more than to be in Hollywood and like working in Hollywood. So he wrote a bunch of scripts and this one, got optioned, and like you said, they brought in a bunch of writers and changed it a lot. And apparently the writer of the shooting script wasn't even credited. And that's where that's where they really poured the comedy on. And it was a lot more serious in previous iterations.
Boy, yeah, it is such a tone mishmash. And it makes all the sense in the world, you know, when you hear that it was just like rewritten by 10 different people with 10 different right. tones in mind. And it does seem like there are scraps from previous drafts in it. Let me know if you thought this while you were watching. Did you think they were leading to a reveal that Sandra Bullock was his daughter?
I saw that online afterward. I did not pick up on that, but I did see that test audiences did and were creeped out when they started getting frisky.
Yeah.
I didn't get that at all. Did you?
Oh, you know, so yeah, every time I watch this, I, you know, cause they make a meal out of the couple of little dramatic scenes in this movie, which really just give you whiplash because it is so goofy. Yeah. And when they decide to like drill down on the reality of this,
right.
You know, so one of those scenes is Stallone, you know, wondering, you know, after he's been frozen, where his daughter is.
Right.
And kind of him weighing the decision whether he should get in contact with her or not. He decides no, but, you know, yeah, kind of the movie writer in everyone's head, you know, seems to say, it's going to be Sandra Bullock because she's your fan. She knows who you are. Anyway,
that would have made sense.
And then they have virtual reality sex and then kiss each other at the end. So,
I mean, looking back, I think that could have been a really interesting plot element if this movie were made by, had a more singular focus. And like, I know this was a first time director who's a TV commercial guy and who like never really did anything else feature film wise.
He does like art installations now. Like he does,
yeah,
like
that's what I saw.
He does like art pieces that play at MoMA's. It's so weird. And he's been doing that for years. Yeah. It's such a strange thing. It's like he did Demolition Man. I think there's a Alicia Silverstone movie in there somewhere. And he's like, now I only do art pieces for MoMA's. So strange.
It is a weird trajectory for a career to take. I know that the shoot was, I don't know about a disaster, but it was, I think, like 40 days over, 50 days over, and Stallone got hurt, and I think they went through 5 ADs, which is never a good sign.
Oh, jeez.
But it was just sort of a challenging shoot, and I'm sure first-time director Joel Silver apparently defended him and was like, that's not the reason it went over budget or over time. It was because it's a really hard movie to make. But at the same time, though, it's one of these movies that was made in 1993 that feels like it was made in 1983 in a good way, though.
Yeah, it definitely does seem like the product of another time. And you know, and I think maybe that adds to the satire a little bit. It's like, is this commenting on the action movies of another day? It kind of sort of is. So, yeah, I think that works in its favor.
It made me miss Stallone, to be honest. I mean, I love that for the first Blood movie and then maybe that first Rambo movie after that. Loved a lot of the Rockies, you know, that was my lifeblood. I grew up on that stuff. And, you know, I was the kid watching Rhinestone on HBO and Cobra.
Rhinestone.
Yeah. Talk about leaning into the comedy. But I love those movies. Those were HBO smash hits for me.
Of course.
Cobra, when I was a kid, like I would watch those over and over.
Yeah.
And I kind of forgot how much I love Stallone in a movie. Like it's, I didn't see any of the Expendables, so it's been a while since I've really seen him in a role. Yeah,
I would say maybe don't. The Expendables sound like a little bit more fun than they actually are. It's kind of a cool.
Are they not good?
Yeah, they're not great. They don't really deliver on the promise of the Expendables. So I actually got this. I have this movie in a three pack. It was one of those like Stallone triple action packs, and it has Tango and Cash and Over the Top, which is like
yes,
the greatest great. $10 I have ever spent is on this thing. yeah, I know that era of Stallone is so much fun. Yeah, you know, he looking great in his nude scene going into his cryo chamber. You know,
dude, he was 47 years old when he made this.
Looks amazing.
Isn't that incredible? He's pushing 75 now.
Jeez, I know, right? Yeah, so yeah, definitely like he was proven he could still do it.
And this is pre-Blade Wesley Snipes, but I imagine this movie kind of set the stage for that a little bit.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know if he was really doing this kind of stuff before Demolition Man, was he?
Yeah, I mean, he had some action movies. God, when was Passenger 57?
Let me look. I know, like, to me, he was the guy back then from Jungle Fever.
Oh, right.
Kind of before he made, that was 92, so that was 1 year before, so that okay. was probably, yeah.
Yeah, so he was kind of like getting into this sort of thing, I guess, and then it seems like that was his late kind of pre-tax exile career was right. action movies, and yeah, he's great in Blade, and I think he's good
in this.
Yeah, totally, he's really physical, all the like high kicks and like, you know, stomps and stuff that he does really seem like him. It does seem like they're going out of their way to say like, he's doing this. It's not a stunt double. And and he's funny. He plays the comedy well. Some of the comedy has not aged well. I think it's worth mentioning, but not in the most egregious of ways, but there's some, you know, there's some stuff you wish wasn't in there, but I think he's great in this, and it's funny that he's coming back and doing all these comedies now. It's just like, yeah, he's funny, like he's, you know, he's funny in this, and I think you know, he's been funny in stuff like Dolomite and Coming to America 2. Yeah, definitely like fun to see comedy Wesley Snipes coming back.
I thought he was great. I thought he was really good in this. I had a lot. He's a really great bad guy.
He is,
and this kind of bad guy that is sort of over the top and fun. And I guess at the time he was kind of a modeled on a Dennis Rodman sort of character. I saw that in a couple of reviews. And I guess I forgot when, you know, back in the day when Dennis Rodman was like the most famous, you know,
right. Yeah.
Black guy with blonde hair on the planet, you know, in the history of the world. I have three words for you.
Okay, please.
Murder, death, kill.
Murder, death, kill. Yes, murder, death, kill. So unnecessary.
it was great, though. That whole scene is amazing at the beginning when the first murder, death, kill happens, or the first trio of murder, death, kills, and all the cops and the reactions on their faces and just how effete they are. And jeez, it was really funny.
Yeah, I know. The like soft future cops. It's a good gag, and they definitely like pick actors who have a gee whiz, you know, kind of sensibility. And and the fact that in the future you don't just say murder, you say murder, death, kill. Right. It's such a great like, just change this a little bit, and then people will know it's the future.
Right. Well, that's one of the fun things about one of these kind of corny, let's envision the future movies is being in I think of a writer's room, but the different writers, at least, you know, what's the future going to be like?
Right.
Oh, I know. We'll have seashells instead of toilet paper, which we'll never explain. We'll have no physical touching. So they give these weird high fives. It was weird. It was almost pandemic-y watching some of this stuff, like the lack of toilet paper, and the lack of physical touching.
Yeah. There is definitely like some, there are pandemic vibes to this. For sure. Yeah, people talking about how gross physical contact is, you know.
What was the fluid? What was the fluid exchange line?
Oh, right. Yeah. Sandra Bullock called
fluid transfer.
Fluid
activities.
Transfer activities.
These are all great album titles for like.
It is funny that bands. That their joke premise seems to stem from like Coneheads. You know, Coneheads were like, we are your parental units. You know,
right.
It does seem to kind of take that. Like everyone talks a little bit like a robot.
Yeah, and the listening to old TV old radio commercials is like the most popular radio station.
Yeah, that's a weird
old TV commercial.
That's a weird joke.
Well, Benjamin Bratt in this movie, I wonder if he ever just looks back at this movie and gets mad that like he had so little to do.
Yeah,
except be a sort of a butt of the joke and. I don't even think he has more than 5 or 6 lines in the whole movie.
Yeah, definitely. I think he does. He does come off really well in his scenes that he has. And I think he does. He's a good choice for the like, you know, gee whiz, ill-equipped cop. But yeah, it does seem like there are some, you know, there are some people who maybe had bigger parts or bigger storylines. God, Jesse Ventura is in the credits and you kind of see him as a member of Wesley Snipes' gang. But doesn't have any lines. And like Rob Schneider is in there for, you know, 2 scenes. So yeah, I wonder if there's a different cut of this or a longer cut where some of these actors have little plot lines or something.
Well, Jesse Ventura definitely had at least one big fight scene with Stallone that was cut out.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Which makes it, I mean, that explains everything because it is weird to see him pop up. Jack Black is in this movie. Did you
Jack Black?
Him?
Yes. I did not know that until I watched it last night. I'm like, hey, this movie is still revealing things to me.
I know. And I had to go back. I was like, wait a minute. Was that who I thought it was?
That's so funny. I know. Yeah. He's one of Dennis Leary's goons. Dennis Leary's freedom fighter guys.
Right. Yeah. I had a hard time kind of figuring out. I might have missed a key line, but I didn't quite get that Dennis Leary, I thought he was another bad guy and not sort of a leader of a resistance of, you know, let's give people more freedom.
Sure. Libertarian. He would be the voice of the libertarian.
I know. Yeah. It's weird to examine this through a political lens today.
It really is. And it definitely, so thinking about it like as a, like railing against PC culture, which I think was, you know, something people were kind of talking about in the 90s and, you know, maybe is now a little more sinister when you look back on it. Like, you know, if this movie was made now, would they be doing cancel culture jokes or like maybe Stallone comes back and is like, I don't know what bathroom to use. You know, what's all this about pronouns? You know, you would hate for it to be that movie.
Yeah, I could see that, though, because I mean, that was sort of. I mean, that was Bill Maher territory back then with his first politically incorrect show.
Right.
Like that was when I first started hearing people railing against that.
Of course.
Was when I was in college. And it's interesting to look at this movie. Like, and on one hand, I could see this being like a conservative underground, you know, cult classic.
Right. Yeah. Totally.
In some ways.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. You, right. It's kind of. Satire at the time was, you know, pretty light, but yeah, I think like definitely like when you compare it to like people who rail against PC culture now, it maybe seems a little more aggressive than it did at the time. Anyway,
I think that's fair.
Yeah. he's not Mr. Potato Head anymore. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. I do love that you know, there are no guns in the future. Except for the museum, which has all the guns and all the ammunition.
And they're loaded.
and they're just ready for
ready
the taking.
To go. It's such a, I think it's a great, cool little plot point in this that before Stallone was on Frozen, they did invent laser guns. But then immediately outlawed them, and Wesley Snipes finds the one laser gun they invented before they got outlawed. Yeah. Such a cool, like oh, I wonder what we missed. Like, while Stallone was frozen, like, what kind of world we missed. It's such a funny, like, such a great little detail about there having been this history of the world before this.
Yeah, and you know at some point, and it does happen, that he's going to find a period car.
Right,
Because I can't drive these things.
Yeah.
You know, whatever Prius mobiles that they had.
Right.
And, you know, they get that badass 442 Oldsmobile.
Right.
And, you know that's coming, yet it's still fun when it pays it off.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. I think it's interesting in this movie what they assume Stallone knows about and what they feel like they need to explain to him. Like, right. You know, he's like, so Los Angeles is San Angeles. So they're like, yes, well, Santa Barbara, Los Angeles, and San Diego merged after the earthquake of blah, blah, blah. So like, great. We explained that to him, but Sandra Bullock doesn't explain VR sex to him. Right. She's like, you don't know about this?
Or how to wipe his butt.
Or how to wipe. Yeah, exactly. Sometimes they sit him down and walk him through the changes, but other times they're just like, he'll figure it out. Or yeah, they definitely, like, it's a case by case basis based on what is funniest at the time.
It was also funny as someone who lived in LA and spent time in both Santa Barbara and San Diego, like the merging of those three places is, and it's not that big of a deal.
No, like, okay. Yeah.
I mean, I guess they're only voting for one person now. Like Santa Barbara's a little nicer. San Diego's a little quieter, but it's basically all sort of the same stuff.
I know. Yeah, it is interesting. It's like, wow, I can't believe they mashed up three similar coastal towns. Right. Like, it's actually kind of sensible. Maybe they should do that anyway.
Dennis Leary was, I kind of forgot the age of when Dennis Leary was this MTV character.
Right.
Who, I don't know if you remembered that stuff, but when he was an MTV guy that did those little short, short films in between videos of him fast talking and railing about stuff. And they really just basically said, here, go do that in this movie.
Definitely. Yeah, I absolutely remember those from MTV and thinking that was funny. I think he had a music video for a song called, like, I'm an Asshole, where he, like, sang about being an asshole.
Right, I remember that.
Yeah, this definitely just seems like they're like, let's give Leary 3.5 minutes of stand-up where, you know, he can, you know, rail about vegetarians or something like that. Yeah, it's weird. It definitely dates it so hard. And I loved it at the time. At the time, I thought it was so funny.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Now it's about the most 90s thing ever committed to film. But yeah, at the time, I loved it.
It was, you know, Sandra Bullock, she has her 90s fetish.
Right.
And that's why it would have made sense for her to be the daughter, because her office is all decorated with basically what looked like my college dorm back then.
Yeah. Lethal Weapon poster, Red Hot Chili Peppers poster.
That was basically me.
Sure.
But it's a movie where I wasn't sure for a little while who to even root for, because I feel like Wesley Snipes is way more interesting and rootable than Stallone's character.
Yeah.
And Dennis Leary's character.
Right.
Like, I kind of thought he was I know he wasn't meant to be the protagonist, but I was way more into, like, when he killed Nigel Hawthorne, what's his name?
I forget that actor's name. Yeah, the guy who plays the, like, supreme leader
of their King George
society.
When he killed him, that was one of the best parts in the movie to me. I was like, I found myself rooting hard for the bad guy, Nigel Hawthorne. Yeah, that's him.
Yeah, and them throwing his body, that, like, very limp dummy, onto the fire is kind of gruesome. Yeah. You know, it's something I noticed when I watched that, like, I didn't pick up the other times I had watched, was the interesting thing that Stallone, Snipes, and Dennis Leary all kind of want the same thing. They want the world to go back to how it was. I'm like, oh, it's so interesting that the hero, the villain, and this other kind of, like, anti-hero guy all kind of want the same thing, but they're all opposed. I guess, you know, Stallone and Dennis Leary join forces at some point, but yeah, I don't know. It's something that you would think they can make a meal out of, but don't, you know? And maybe kind of like that speaks to the, you know, kind of hodgepodge of a script that they were using. But yeah, I don't know. There's no moment where Snipes and Stallone both say like, hey, we both miss the old ways, right? Is there a way we could work together? It's
I could have seen that though. Like, I could see a version of this movie where Leary, Stallone, and Snipes, and maybe bring Sandra Bullock along because she's into it.
Right.
Team up to destroy this new, and maybe make the guy from Shawshank Redemption, the police chief, you know, he's always the ultimate bad guy. I don't know why they made him the second in command bad guy.
I know. But, yeah. With his little, his two frame glasses.
Those are so funny looking. It's the future.
It's the future. Glasses have two frames.
Ooh. But yeah, I could see them teaming up and reverting back to the old days. But then it's sort of like those people who miss Times Square when it was a shithole.
Right. Yes.
And yearn for the days when New York was dirty and scary.
Yeah.
Which I have found myself do at times. And it doesn't make any sense. But
I know.
Like Stallone wants there to be crime again so he can fight crime.
Right. Yeah, that is an interesting. Yeah, it is an interesting exploration of that impulse. And I know exactly what you mean. And I do feel that way about L.A. sometimes when I see how it's changed. I'm like, remember when this was a, you know, dive bar and, you know, you could buy cocaine in the bathroom and now it's a Panera Bread.
Hollywood. And really
maybe the
up.
Panera Bread's better.
Right.
Honestly. And they have pizza now.
Another one of the funniest parts was when Wesley Snipes was sourcing bad guys from the past.
Right.
To thaw out and make on his as his henchman. And then he chooses Jeffrey Dahmer. And he says, I love that guy.
He'd be great. I'm like,
Jeffrey Dahmer would be the worst possible choice of someone to be on your bad guy team.
So crazy. I know. That is insane.
It's like, what is he going to send him to do? Like, all right, you'll be the guy that goes into the bars and drugs underage boys.
Right.
And that'll be your job on the bad guy team.
Yes, when we're waging war against society, we need someone to do that. Yeah, totally. And the thought that, like, all he has to do is thaw these guys out and they will follow him is very funny, too. Just the assumption that, like, well, naturally, they'll all do what I say.
Yeah, it had a great ending too with the, it had an ending I rewound two or three times because I couldn't quite make out exactly, like I know Wesley Snipes ended up getting froze and having his head kicked off or whatever.
Yes.
But the device and the means that it all happened, I just didn't quite get. I think it was a play on the beginning with the gasoline and the fire.
Yeah. Yes, I think it is. It is kind of meant to be a parallel scene to that 1996 dystopia that we see. So, yeah. So in that scene, Wesley Snipes, you know, punctures the gasoline can that is always in the room in an action movie. Right. There's always just a fucking giant drum of gasoline. Yeah, like Doom, like when you're playing Doom, there's just explosive barrels. So yeah, and then at the end, yeah, Stallone punctures the like cryo tube and the, you know, in a very Terminator 2 like way, Wesley Snipes freezes and then he gets his head kicked off. I think you're right. I think they were trying to like, you know, create parallel scenes, echoes of the past, but it's a very confusing scene.
It looked good though. I mean,
yeah, it looks cool.
When he kicked the head off and the frozen blood and everything, I like that.
Yeah, there's like great practical stuff in this. Like they definitely build the, you know, the cryo prison is definitely a built set with mechanical arms and shit.
So most of this stuff is.
Yeah, it definitely is. Like, yeah, if this was, you know, an Avengers movie, it would all be, you know, CGI in Atlanta somewhere. But it's got a cool practical look to it, like a lot of neat sets and stuff.
Well, I think Jurassic Park was that same year, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, 93. Wild year for movies.
So, yeah, I mean, it just missed out on, I mean, this would have been a completely different movie had it been released in 1995, I think.
Totally.
Visually, because, and, you know, that's one reason it looks a little corny is because they did use they're like, we're in LA and we need to make it look like the future. So
yeah,
let's just sweep up and make everything look really clean.
It's funny. There's the buildings they use for the future buildings. I used to work in one of them. And one of them's the Pacific Design Center that's by my old apartment.
With the blue windows. Yeah. I recognize that one. Yeah.
Totally. So yeah, there's a lot of like recognizable LA buildings in this that are supposed to be the future.
You just got to keep that camera tight.
You got to. Absolutely. Yes. Don't pan over to show the Marie calendars that's next to this place. Because all restaurants are Taco Bell. There would be no Marie calendars in this world because.
Oh, that's good. And, you know, I'm sure you know this, but a little factoid about the movie is that the Taco Bell was Pizza Hut in Europe.
Oh, that's funny because they don't.
They didn't know much about Taco Bell. So they dubbed. Great. They reshot stuff and they dubbed some stuff to make Pizza Hut the winner of the franchise wars.
That's so funny. That's great.
Which they offered to McDonald's, by the way, and Burger King, and I think they all turned it down.
Fools.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. They said that I wish that Blu-ray I have had like a Pizza Hut cut on it, so where you could watch it with Pizza Hut dubbed in. That'd be fun for the fans.
Another one of the funny lines was when pre-virtual sex, when Stallone is talking about the old ways. He goes, you know, boning the wild mamba, the hunka-chunka.
The hunka-chunka, I know.
Has anyone ever said that in the history of the world?
No one calls it the hunka-chunka.
Oh boy, that was really funny.
Seem like maybe if they said that was like Stallone improv, I wouldn't be too surprised.
And I think originally Jean-Claude Van Damme was offered and Steven Seagal was offered to team up for this movie. I don't know who was going to be.
Oh, cool.
I guess Seagal would have been the bad guy, maybe.
Yeah, I could see it both ways. I guess Van Damme hasn't played too many bad guys up until kind of recently. I guess neither has Seagal. Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. That would be kind of a cool worse movie.
Well, it says that neither one of them really wanted. Yeah, it would have been worse. Neither one of them wanted to play the villain. And then Stallone came aboard and he wanted Jackie Chan to play Simon Phoenix.
Oh, cool.
And Jackie Chan was like, I don't know, man. I got a really big following in Asia. And I don't know if they would be down with this because I'm the hero.
That's interesting. Yeah, huh. I mean, I think it worked out definitely with Snipes. I mean, any one of those guys would have been worse in the role. Although, you know, to see Jackie Chan add his Jackie Chan stuff into this would be really cool. I'm sure they would have done, you know, some free running and, you know, kind of funny,
right?
Some funny fight choreography. But as far as like performance goes, nobody on that list is better than Snipes.
Well, Stallone, as late as last year, said that he was developing a sequel
with
Warner Brothers.
Okay.
And he said it's going to happen. And I was very surprised to see that. I thought when I read the article, I scrolled up very quickly to see what year that was. And I thought it was going to be maybe 2003.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good estimation.
But no, it was just in 2020. He said that he said it's going to happen, and I'm not sure if it is or not. But I think it could be pretty interesting to see what's going on with that now.
Yeah, me too. I would be fascinated to watch another one of these. Yeah, I you know, the hope is that it wouldn't be oppressively conservative, you know.
Right.
But yeah, I can't really explain why this movie is in my brain like it is. And I think for a lot of people my age, it has stuck with us. It's amazing. I feel like when I talk to people and, you know, you say the three seashells or, you know,
right.
You can take this job and shovel it, like all that right. stuff, you know, yeah. I don't know. All that stuff is so memorable. And I every time I watch this movie, I'm like, I get why this is fun, but I don't understand why it lives in my brain like it does. Yeah, it's interesting.
Well, I liked it, man. I thought it was a lot of fun. I feel bad about walking out on it.
That's okay. You know, you just weren't ready. You weren't ready for Demolition Man.
I don't think I was. And I think maybe it's an interesting movie to watch for the first time in 2021.
Yeah.
Because now you can definitely see it as a kind of a funny satire that hit on some levels and just missed on some others.
Right.
But, you know, I see with the potential of what it could have been, like a RoboCop almost.
Totally. Yeah. It definitely like is not as good at that tone as RoboCop is, but definitely seems to be trying for a similar thing. It has like, you know, more hard jokes than RoboCop does. But yeah, it is. Yeah. I think it is trying to like hit that same target that just RoboCop hits fucking dead on bullseye in this movie, kind of.
Well, Paul Verhoeven, I mean, give this movie to him,
and it
would have been amazing, you know?
Yeah, I've never thought of that. That is a very cool thing to imagine if Verhoeven did this.
But I guess when Starship Troopers was sometime around here, too, wasn't it?
I think it's 96 or 97, yeah, so.
Okay, well, so he was busy doing that.
Satirical action masterpiece.
Which, by the way, I hadn't seen yet. It was 97 until... I covered it on the show. I don't know why, but
really?
Somehow Starship Troopers got by me.
Yeah.
And I totally loved it.
Starship Troopers is a blast and has aged so well. And the
And
the like comedy is great. And yeah, just the like, yeah, just the, and you know, the fun of that movie is that's, you know, the secret satire in a dumb action movie. You know, cold take, of course, but it comes across so well.
Well, dude, this was a lot of fun.
Totally.
I want to tell you that you are fined 1 credit for a violation of the verbal morality statute. You're fined many credits.
Yeah. Oh, man, I'm not going to have any credits left to eat at Taco Bell.
That was a pretty funny. I mean, they go to the point where it was funny and then they overdid it. And then it got so much so that it was like a Simpsons joke or something.
Yeah.
And that you just hear it going off in the background in all these scenes.
Yeah. Great little continuity.
Really funny again.
Yeah, I know. You just faintly in the background hearing the thing scold them for swearing is a good gag.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah. Good gag. Sandra Bullock, not understanding the aphorisms, funny every time.
She was great.
Yeah. Originally Laurie Petty. Laurie Petty actually shot some scenes and hated Stallone so much. Yeah.
Oh, she didn't like Stallone.
Yeah, I think that was the stuff I read. That seems to be the subtext is that they couldn't stand each other.
Interesting.
Yeah, but yeah, she would have been good.
The mouth on that girl.
Yeah,
look at that. Her hair is like a man's haircut. Get her a nice wig.
I don't know.
Yeah, can we get someone sexy in here?
Get someone with exactly. Speaking of our last conversation of Point Break, I will, 90s Laurie Petty is about as good as it gets.
Agreed.
But yeah, you know, Sandy's so funny in this, kind of underplays it. So I think it worked out.
Totally agree. Fun movie. Check out Demolition Man, and everybody do yourself a favor. Pre-order Bubble, pre-order the hardcover, $27.99. That's fine. That's a good deal.
A bargain at twice the price. You got 277 pages of action.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, it's long. Yeah, action and jokes great art and beautiful colors and sweeping vistas.
It looks awesome. I can't wait.
Oh, thanks, man. Yes, so, you know, $19.99 for the soft cover for those cheapskates out there, but spring for the hardcover. You're worth it. You're worth it.
Agreed. And I look forward to having you back to talk about another 90s cornball action flick.
This is great. Yeah, I love this as a running theme. I know Hodgman has the Avengers movies.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe we'll do, maybe we could do Commando or Predator or something.
Perfect.
Awesome.
I love it. All right. Thanks a lot, Jordan.
Yeah, thanks, Shane.
Movie Crush is produced and written by Charles Bryant and Noel Brown, edited and engineered by Seth Nicholas Johnson, and scored by Noel Brown here in our home studio at Ponce Market, Atlanta, Georgia, for iHeartRadio.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.